Now, like we did last time, do you remember what I told you that the unique thing was about the story about the 5,000 being fed? What is it, Janine? It's in all four Gospels. Now, this incident about Jesus walking on the sea, of course, it happened immediately after that. But it is not in all four Gospels. It's only in three of the Gospels. It's not in Luke. So what we're going to do here this morning is take a look at this story as told in all three of the Gospels. It's a very short account. So let's read this account here in John chapter 6. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when even was now come, his disciples went down unto the sea and entered into a ship and went over the sea towards Capernaum. And it was now dark, and Jesus was not come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. So when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, they see Jesus walking on the sea and drawing near unto the ship, and they were afraid. But he saith unto them, It is I, be not afraid. Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at the land whither they went. Now, of the three gospel accounts of this incident, John's is the shortest account. Let me flip over to Matthew chapter 14, and let's read that account. It gives us a few more details in this Matthew account, and it says, in starting in verse 22, Matthew 14, 22, And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into the ship. You see, that's not mentioned in John, that he constrained them. What does constrained mean, by the way? Sort of he kind of, yeah, urged them on or commanded them to get into the ship and to go before him unto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. It didn't tell us that in John. It didn't say that he went there to pray. It just says he went there alone. But Matthew tells us he went there to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. I guess that's a mild way to put it. That it was contrary. It was about to capsize their ship, apparently. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, It is a spirit. And they cried out for fear. They thought it was a ghost walking on the waters. And that's not told to us in John, you see, only here. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. Then we have this account of Peter jumping out of the boat. That's not in John either. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And he said, Come. And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? When they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. Then they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, Of a truth, thou art the Son of God. And when they were gone over, they came into the land of Gennesaret. Now, let's go to Mark chapter 6 and get the third account. Mark chapter 6, starting in verse 45. And it says, And straightway he constrained his disciples to get into the ship and to go to the other side before unto Bethsaida. Now that it tells us they were going to Bethsaida. It doesn't tell us that in the other Gospels. While he sent the people away. And when he had sent them away, he departed into a mountain to pray. And when even was come, the ship was in the midst of the sea, and he alone on the land. And he saw them toiling in rowing. Now, it doesn't tell us that in John. He saw them. Isn't that amazing? He was on the land. It's nighttime. They're out on the sea. And it says he saw them toiling and rowing, for the wind was contrary unto them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he cometh unto them, walking upon the sea, and would have passed by them. But when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit, and cried out, for they all saw him, and were troubled. And immediately he talked with them, and saith unto them, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And he went up unto them into the ship, and the wind ceased, and they were sore amazed in themselves beyond measure, and wondered, for they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. And when they had passed over, they came into the land of Gennesaret and drew to the shore. Well, it's an interesting little story, isn't it? It's historical. I mean, it really happened. And when I say a story, I don't mean a fictional story. I mean that this event really happened here. Now, remember that Jesus had just finished a long day of preaching and healing. And he had healed all manners of sickness and so forth there in the mountain. And at the end of the day, what did Jesus do? That's true, but what did he do before that? After this long day of preaching and healing, what did he do? He fed them. Yeah. He perceived that they were hungry. They had been there all day long, and so he fed them, and we saw the account of that last time, and the disciples just couldn't figure out how in the world we're going to feed all these people. It may have been as many as 15,000 people. And so the disciples began to scour around, and they came up with a lad who had five loaves, or little buns, and two small fishes, two little sardines, and Jesus fed the multitudes. That evening, it said it was at the evening, at the end of the day, when he fed them this this food. Yes, ma'am. Creating the food. Absolutely, yeah. This is one of those miracles that's a little different than some of the other miracles. Like the water into wine, he took one substance and turned it into another substance. But in this particular miracle, he took a little bit of substance and made a lot of substance. So, yes, that was a creative act. He created the food that he fed them. So he set them down on the grass and fed them, and the disciples at this time were quite sure that Jesus was the Christ because they saw this tremendous miracle that he had just performed. You can imagine. And they were right there firsthand. They had the baskets in their hands, and they saw that the baskets would never get empty. Well, this was quite amazing. They were astounded, and they knew that this man, Jesus, was the Christ. Now, they had seen his ministry and heard him preach, and they had seen undeniable miracles up to this point. So they could not really deny that this man Jesus was sent from God. Jesus at this time was world famous for this reason. Because of all of these miracles, people from all of the cities were coming out. And they came all over the countryside to see Jesus. And they brought their sick, naturally. I mean, if you had a sick daughter or a sick son, or if you were sick, you would come and find this man because word is spreading everywhere that he's healing all manner of sickness. And the disciples had a front row seat for all of this miraculous display, which Jesus performed day after day. And now it's the end of another long day. And you will notice in the Matthew account that Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship. This word constrained carries with it the idea, I think, that they did not particularly want to go. And so he had to constrain them to go. Now, they didn't want to go, but maybe for several reasons. Number one, they just wanted to stay around Jesus. I mean, too much was happening. This was an amazing thing. This was a once-in-a-lifetime. I mean, they had the opportunity to see the Savior of the world at work. And so they didn't really want to go, but Jesus told them to go, get on the ship and go to the other side of the sea. Also, we found that in the John account, that the people were wanting to make him king. The people were fired up, and they were wanting to do something that Jesus did not want them to do. They wanted to pick him up on his shoulders and carry him into Jerusalem and say, "Here's our king." And so the disciples wanted to hang around, probably to assist Jesus in crowd control, for one thing. So Jesus was in some peril. So Jesus had to constrain them to get into the ship. Now, apparently they had learned at this point to obey him, and so they boarded the ship, and they set out for the other side according to the command of Jesus. Now, we find in the other Gospels that he actually went to Capernaum, or they went to Capernaum. And so apparently Jesus had sent them on their way to go to Capernaum. It says also that Jesus sent the multitude away. It doesn't say it in the John account, but it says it in Matthew and Mark, that Jesus sent the multitude away. Now, you got to imagine this. This multitude is clamoring after Jesus. They're wanting to make him a king. They will not leave. And Jesus commanded them to go away. It seems almost like this is a miraculous sending away. They would not have left otherwise, but somehow in some miraculous way, Jesus stirred it up in their hearts, at least, to go away. Now, we find in the John, is it the John account, I think it is, or one of the accounts, that not all of them left. Because they were there that night, remember, and when they woke up the next morning, Jesus wasn't there. So some of them, probably the multitude went away, but many of them stayed, or else came back before daylight because they wanted to pick back up and see Jesus again that next day. At any rate, Jesus sent most of them away, but some remained. It says, and Jesus went up into the mountain alone. Look at John 6:15. It says there that when Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force, you see, to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. Now this is instructive, I think. Jesus could have stayed and accepted their adoration. He could have stayed and become king, but he departed up into the mountain to be alone. I think Jesus gave us a very good example here. And if you study the life of Christ throughout the Gospels, you'll note that on several occasions, probably many occasions, he retired to be alone at times. He cherished those times. And, you know, when you get by yourself, it's you and God. That's what it means to be alone. It's you and God, no one else there. Now, most of the time, you and I, in our culture, we stay so busy. And when there is no one else there, what do? We turn the TV on. So we're really not alone so much in our culture. But Jesus retired quite often to be alone. And he did it as a time of reflection. You know, when you're alone, there's two ways to reflect. You can reflect inward, you know, evaluate yourself, and you can reflect upward. And that's what we should be doing when we have time alone, is reflecting inward and also upward. Many people don't like to be alone. Have you ever known people like that? Where they don't like to be alone. They always want to be with the party crowd, or they want to be with a crowd somewhere. And they resist being alone at all costs. Perhaps it's because they don't really want to look inward. You know, there's some things in there that they don't want to see. And so they're afraid to be alone. Might be a time where you have to look on the inside and see what's there. And also, they have no interest in looking upward, and therefore, what's the point of being alone. Let me be with the crowd where I don't have to do these things and think about these things. But it seems that Jesus coveted time alone, even on in his very special or a very busy schedule. He sought out time for reflection and a time of prayer. To be a Christian, a part of being a Christian is engaging in self-reflection. You cannot be a Christian without constantly thinking about who you are on the inside. And the Bible encourages us much to look inside. Because, see, there's a lot of work to be done there, isn't there? We have to weed out that old and put on the new, the Bible says. And so self-reflection is a very, very important process in the Christian life. The Scriptures say, "Search me, O God, and know my heart, and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me." Now, God is not the only one that should be searching. We ourselves should be searching. And so that we understand what makes us tick on the inside. All right, so Jesus departed up into this mountain to be alone and to pray. Listen to what Jesus said about praying in Matthew 6:6 on the Sermon on the Mount. He said, "But thou, when thou prayest, go where?" Pardon? "Go into your closet." Enter into your closet. "And when thou hast shut thy door," you know, don't even leave the door open, shut the door, "pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly." It's hard to pray publicly, isn't it? There's a place for public prayer. There's a place for family prayer. There's a place for praying around the dinner table, and so forth. But real earnest prayer, Jesus taught, occurs in your closet with the door shut. That's where you can really be earnest with God when you are alone. Prayer is a private and intimate time of being alone with God. And so on this occasion, Jesus went up into the mountain where he could be alone with God in his prayers. You remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, which was probably the most difficult night of Jesus' career. And when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, he left some of the disciples at the entrance of the garden. Remember, and he took the inner circle a few steps further. And he counseled with them for a moment or two. And then he left them there and he went on into the inner part of the garden. He went there to be alone and he prayed there. Remember? What was his posture there? Anyone remember what his posture was? He fell down on his face in the dirt that he created and prayed. And it says that he prayed more earnestly. So he demonstrated to us that the best kind of prayer is private prayer. Now I want to take a look here. So Jesus went up into the mountain here. I want you to see the distress now which came upon the disciples. This is found in verses 15 through 18 of John 6. "When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again and went into a mountain himself alone. And when evening was now come, his disciples went down under the sea and entered into a ship and went over the sea towards Capernaum." Now, were they obeying the will of God here? Yes, Jesus constrained them to get into the ship. He told them to go. "And it was now dark, and Jesus was not come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew." So when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, I'm not sure how long a furlong is. Anybody know? It's so many feet, isn't it? They see Jesus walking on the sea and drawing near in the ship, and they were afraid. So we find that the ship was somewhere out there in the middle of the sea, tossed with waves, And the wind blew. It was a great wind that blew in John. In Matthew, it says the wind was contrary. You know, it was contrary, all right. And so here they are, right where Jesus told them to go, and the storm comes up. Isn't that kind of way it is in our life too? If we're even if we're obeying God and doing the things that God would have us to do, many times we're going to find that storms are going to come up. The car doesn't necessarily break down in your driveway, but it breaks down in the middle of the highway most of the time, doesn't it? And halfway between home and your destination. And this is the way it happened to the disciples. The ship, you know, the wind couldn't have arose while they were in port, but it arose when they were on the sea. And that's the way it is with us. Storms usually don't come when it's a convenient time for the storms, but it comes when it's an inconvenient time, doesn't it? In your Christian walk, you're probably going to have clear sailing for a while. There's going to be times where you just sail smoothly and it's the winds at your back. But then there's going to be times when you're in the middle of the sea and storms will arise. And God sends these storms to try your faith, to show your need to rely on Him, and to strengthen you. Now notice that the disciples were right where Jesus sent them, and the storm arises there. Now, if they had been fleeing His will, if they had been doing something they weren't supposed to do, then they rightfully should be terrified of the storm. And God sends storms when we're disobeying as well, doesn't He? I found it to be true in my life, and I'm sure you have too, that He sends storms of judgment our way, and we have a right to be terrified of His judgments. They're fierce sometimes. Remember Jonah? God told Jonah to go preach in Nineveh, and Jonah took off the other way. He didn't want to preach to those old Ninevites. Those were his enemies. And so Jonah took off the other way, and God sent a storm and terrified Jonah. And Jonah was cast into the sea, and the whale swallowed him up, and so forth. So there's, in one sense, we should be terrified of the judgment of God, and He sends judgments when we're disobeying, but He also sends storms when we're obeying. And this was the case here of the disciples. If they had only had a greater faith, they probably would not have been so terrified here. But they found themselves in the middle of the sea. The storm arose, and it says that they were terrified of the storm. Now, the thing about the disciples is that they had had a similar circumstance. Does anybody remember what had happened to the disciples just before this? Maybe not just before, but at least sometime prior to this. They also had a storm arise in the sea. And they also were terrified on that occasion, but who was in the boat with them when that happened? Jesus was in the boat at that time. What was He doing in the boat? He was sleeping. Jesus wasn't that terrified of the storm. He was asleep. It meant nothing to Him. But the disciples were terrified, and they woke Jesus up, and Jesus calmed the storm. But in this particular case, Jesus test their faith with a little bit more severe situation. Again, they're on the sea, they're in the boat, the storm is raging, they're about to perish, but Jesus isn't in the boat. Oh me, if only Jesus were in the boat, we'd wake Him up and He would calm the storm. So you see how their faith is tested even more this time. Now they must trust Jesus even though He's not in the boat. Doesn't Jesus educate us by degrees? When you're a new Christian, He takes you to a little bit of a trial here and a little bit of a trial there. And on your way through life, you find out that the trials get more severe and more severe. And He teaches you to trust Him. He is going to be there. He's going to calm the storm at some point. And so he teaches us lesson by lesson, sometimes with bigger lessons as we go, and we learn by increments to trust him. So when Jesus first called the disciples, he told them to follow me, and they learned how to follow him by little lessons along the way. So we've seen the distress of the disciples. Now let's take a look at Christ coming to them in their distress. And I think the lesson here is that Christ will never fail to come to you in your trouble. If you are His, He will never fail to come to you. Now in the next verse, we're going to see the vigilance of Christ, the goodness of Christ to His people, and the great power of Christ to help in time of trouble. I want to flip to, I said the next verse, this is actually the Matthew account. If you'll flip over to Matthew 14, and let's see in verse 25, it says, "But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea." Now, I want you to also take a look at the Mark account. Look over at Mark 6. I referred to this just a moment ago, but in Mark 6 and verse 48, a very interesting thing is stated. It says, "And he saw them toiling in rowing." Now Jesus is up in the mountain. He's alone. He's praying. It's dark. Evening has come and gone. The disciples have left. They're out on the sea. And it says Jesus saw them. Isn't that interesting? So you see, first of all, the vigilance of our Lord over us. When it comes to His people, Jesus is never looking the other way. He is always vigilant. And even though He was in the mountain and they were in the middle of the sea, He kept His eye on them. Did you know that if He loves you, He keeps His eyes on you always in a caring way? It says in Psalm 121:4, "Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall never slumber nor sleep." How many times have we been in trouble in our life and He never closed His eyes? He never turned His back so that He didn't see us. He never shut us out. And when we were in deep distress, He didn't take His eyes off, but He watched over us. And so He did for the disciples. When Jesus was praying in the mountain, He kept one eye open. It was watching the disciples. And the disciples were never really in danger, because Jesus watched over them continually by all-seeing eyes. So Jesus, in His omniscience, saw them. But also, notice not only the vigilance of Christ, but notice the goodness of Christ. Jesus didn't just sit back and watch them sink to the bottom of the sea, but He went to them. It says that He went in the fourth watch of the night. Does anybody know what watch that is? 3 to 6 a.m. In the night time, there were 12 hours. From 6 to 9 p.m. was the first watch. 9 to 12 was the second watch. 12 to 3 a.m. was the third. And 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. was the fourth watch of the night. And Jesus came to them in the fourth watch of the night. I don't know how long they had been battling that storm, probably all night. They left that previous evening. At some time in the night, the storm arose, and Jesus didn't come until the fourth watch of the night. It seems that Jesus delights to come to us when we're under the greatest distress. You know, when Moses led the people out of Egypt, they came to a difficult situation, didn't they? They came to the Red Sea, and there was no way to get across it. And the Egyptian army was coming, and they were about ready to slaughter Israel there at the Red Sea. But at the last moment, the very last moment, God appeared, parted the Red Sea, and delivered them. Many times in the Old Testament, God waited to the last moment when there seemed to be no hope, and then He would deliver Israel with a great deliverance. And Jesus came to these disciples in the fourth watch of the night. So it was the wee hours of the morning. Perhaps it was just before dawn, and it likely was just before the disciples perished. And Jesus came to them in the last moment. And it showed His goodness to them. He intended to deliver them, and He did deliver them. But we see also here in this story the great power of Christ. So we've seen His vigilance, we have seen His goodness, and now we see the great power of Christ. When He was in the mountain, He saw them. This teaches us about His omniscience. But He came to them by His power or His omnipotence. What kind of a man is this? He came walking on the water. How can anyone who believes the Scriptures possibly not deny that Jesus was God? Here Jesus shows His dominion over all things. Whether they be created things or creatures, Jesus in His divinity has all things under His feet and at His command. And here He had the water under His feet. And all things obey Him. There is nothing too great for Jesus. If He so chooses, He makes waters congeal under His feet so that He walks easily on the water. And if He so chooses, He suspends the force of gravity so that His body doesn't sink. He did it in the Old Testament. Remember the axe that floated on the water? And He did it here. He made the waters of the Red Sea wall up so that Israel could walk across. And here He makes the waters a personal walkway that He might come to the disciples. So we should learn from this never to doubt the great power of God to redeem us out of trouble. He is able to overcome great obstacles. He can change the very course of nature if need be. There is no limit to His power to save you. He can save your sinful heart by His great power, and He can deliver you from any trouble. Whatever your circumstances are, Jesus has the power to redeem you. Now, I don't know what particular trouble you may be in, but never doubt His great power to help you. So we've seen the vigilance of Christ, we saw the goodness of Christ, and we saw the power of Christ in coming to the disciples. Well, I was going to tell you about the interaction between Christ and the disciples, but we've got 2 minutes. I may wait and do that next Sunday school hour or something. So we'll finish that up next time.